And we're back, but Dennis is going to announce this AI corner for us because we're going to start with his story.
Yeah, we have a story that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. We've talked about what are called air-gapped systems mm-hmm. that are implemented for security's sake.
Right.
These are computers that are not networked, or they might be networked to each other, but not to the internet. At any rate, that's used to keep them secure.
All right.
Well, how do hackers get into them? You would be surprised.
We'll see what Karen and Bob says.
All right, so today we're diving into the world of cyber espionage.
Yeah.
And I think this one's going to be a wild ride.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about a group known as Golden Jackal. And let me tell you, these guys, they've been quietly making off with some of the most closely guarded secrets out there.
I think what's really unsettling about Golden Jackal is that they've kind of exposed this vulnerability in a system that, frankly, a lot of people considered virtually impenetrable.
Right.
We're talking about air-gapped systems, the kind that are physically isolated from the internet.
Right. You would think that would be enough.
You'd think so, right.
Yeah, it's like locking something in a safe that's buried like 10 feet underground and thinking nobody's ever going to get to it.
Right.
But Golden Jackal, they're like the digital equivalent, of master safecrackers.
Yeah.
They've been active since at least 2019. And what's got the cybersecurity world really buzzing is their approach.
Hmm.
They haven't just developed one set of tools to pull off these heists.
Right.
They've developed two
entirely separate sets of digital tools.
It's almost unheard of.
It's really rare. And it speaks to a level of sophistication and organization that you don't see every day, even among the most advanced cyber espionage groups out there.
Right.
And it's not just the quantity of tools, it's the quality, it's how they use them.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Jackal approaches these systems like a surgeon would.
Wow.
With a very, very specific tool for each delicate step of the operation.
Okay, so walk us through it.
Okay.
What did that first set of tools look like?
Okay, so imagine this.
Okay.
You are working at, let's say, an Etsy.
Okay.
You find a USB drive just lying around. Seems harmless enough, right?
Right.
You plug it in and boom.
Uh-oh.
You've just unknowingly opened the door to Golden Jackal.
Wow.
That's Jackal Worm, their initial point of entry.
It's just insidious how something so small and ordinary can be such a, like a weapon.
Absolutely. And that's where it gets even more sophisticated.
Okay.
So once Jackal Worm has kind of wriggled its way in,
right,
they then deploy Jackal Control. It's a type of malware known as a Trojan.
Okay.
Think of it like this. It's disguised as this harmless file, this little piece of software.
Right.
But in reality, it's giving them the keys to the kingdom.
Wow.
It allows remote access to the infected system.
So they're in.
Huh. They're in.
But how do they actually get their hands on the data, especially if it's on an air-gapped system?
That's where Golden Dealer comes in.
Okay.
It acts like this digital courier, and it carries even more malicious tools onto that air-gapped system.
And they're still using the USB drive.
Often, yeah. They're using that seemingly innocent USB drive as their delivery method.
It's clever, but it's also terrifyingly simple.
Exactly. And at this point, they have a whole arsenal at their disposal, including a tool called Golden Howl.
Golden Howl.
This is essentially a multi-purpose backdoor.
Okay.
It lets them steal data. It lets them maintain persistent access. They can essentially control the infected system as if they were sitting right in front of it.
Right.
Imagine having a secret backdoor into an embassy's network.
Yeah.
All thanks to, again, a seemingly harmless USB drive.
It's like something out of a spy film.
I know, right?
Except this is all too real.
And then there's Golden Robo, which is designed with one purpose in mind.
Oh, yeah?
Stealing specific files and smuggling them out of the network undetected.
Wow.
It's laser focused, efficient, and incredibly difficult to detect.
So they know what they're going for.
They know what they want.
They're not just randomly grabbing files.
No. This isn't just about disrupting systems. This is about stealing information.
Right.
And they were very good at it.
So we're talking about a group that clearly has a plan.
Yes.
They've got the resources and the expertise to do this on a grand scale.
Yeah.
And what's really unnerving is they didn't just stop there.
Right.
They didn't just perfect one way of doing this.
Right.
They switched things up completely a few years later and developed a whole new set of tools.
Yes, from 2022 to 2024, we see this fascinating evolution. Golden Jackal, they shifted their focus to a target within an EU government organization.
Wow.
And this time, their tools were primarily coded in Go.
Go.
Yeah, it's a different programming language.
So they learned a whole new language.
Which suggests this constant drive to adapt and improve their methods.
Wow.
Which is incredibly concerning for anyone trying to, you know, trying to stay one step ahead.
So they upped their game with this new programming language.
Yeah, they really did.
So as you
what
can see,
behind this
new power down Karen
well, one
and
thing
Bob
that's interesting
there,
is they kept
you know, basically these guys are, you got to be careful where you stick your USB drive.
Right. And that USB drive becomes the hinge pin of the scheme.
Right.
Because when that USB drive is taken out of the air-gapped computer and put into an internet-connected computer,
yeah,
it homes in, yep, reports in, and then it gets other instructions to carry out later. So effectively, the hackers are controlling an air-gapped computer.
Right.
As long as somebody's willing to move that USB drive back and forth,
yep,
they can take control of the computer.
Wow. So Karen and Bob, they did a great job explaining that for you as our AI correspondents. Because just so you remember, Karen and Bob do not exist in reality.
Yes.
They are artificial. And we'll have them cover another story here now. This is, again, Cybersecurity Month is October, so Dennis has got his story. This one is another one that's kind of concerning about phishing and how basically the bad guys are using conventional technologies to trick you. So let's see what Karen and Bob have to say about that.
Ever get those "you won the lottery" emails? Yeah, we all have. It's like a rite of passage in the digital age, right?
Right.
But what about the ones that look totally legit? You know, from companies you actually use, asking you to do something you do every day. Like, hey, can you just quickly view this file for me?
Yeah, I've seen those.
And that's where things get a little scary. Because today, we're diving into a new phishing technique that's about as subtle as a chameleon in a disco.
Oh, this sounds interesting.
It really is. We're talking about hackers weaponizing trusted file hosting services like OneDrive, SharePoint, Dropbox, that kind of thing.
So like those everyday platforms we use all the time.
Exactly. Our source is this article from the Hacker News. It was just published on October 9th, 2024. The title is A Mouthful. Microsoft detects growing use of file hosting services in business email compromise attacks.
Okay, so right off the bat, business email compromise sounds pretty serious.
It is. And to understand why hackers are so keen on compromising those trusted vendors, we need to understand what they're actually after.
It's all about leverage, right? I mean, in the old days, phishing was like casting a wide net. Send out thousands of emails, hope someone bites. But this sounds much more targeted.
You hit the nail on the head. Instead of going after us directly, they're going after the companies we trust, the ones who already have access to our information.
Clever. Infiltrating the very systems we rely on, then using those systems against us, that living off the land tactic, right?
Right. So walk me through how this whole thing actually plays out in the real world. Let's say I'm the target. What am I going to see?
Okay, so you get an email, looks totally normal, maybe even references a project you're working on. And the sender, it appears to be from a company, you know, maybe a vendor, a contractor, your accounting software, who knows?
Okay, so far so good. I'm not suspicious yet.
Exactly. And the email, super simple. Just asking you to view a shared file. You know, hey, can you just take a quick look at this on OneDrive? Or I uploaded the latest revisions to Dropbox. Totally believable, right?
Totally. I get those requests all the time.
Exactly. They're exploiting those everyday workflows, those little moments where we're not really paying attention. But here's where it gets interesting. Oftentimes, they'll set that file to view only.
Wait, so even that little detail is part of the scheme?
Oh, absolutely. You see, that view only, it serves two very sneaky purposes.
Okay, now you've got me hooked. What are they?
So first, that view only, it's like a mental sigh of relief, you know?
Yeah, you figure, okay, it's view only, what's the harm?
Exactly. It lulls us into this false sense of security. Can't download anything, can't click any shady links, we think. But that's where our assumptions betray us.
Because they're still shady links, they're just
hidden. Tucked away inside the document itself. And here's the thing, those links, they're only active if you try to edit or download stuff you can't do in view only mode.
Oh, wow. It's like hiding in plain sight.
Exactly. You'd never suspect a thing. It just seems like, you know, standard procedure.
Not a red flag at all.
Yeah.
So then what? They're hoping I'll get frustrated and try to download it anyway.
Not necessarily. Remember that authentication prompt I mentioned? That's where the real magic happens.
You mean that please re-authenticate to view this file thing?
Precisely. You've opened this view-only file, you're not really thinking too hard about it, and bam, that familiar request pops up. Enter your email and one-time password.
And of course, I assume it's legit, because why wouldn't I?
Exactly. It's the perfect setup, because that authentication prompt, it's a fake, a clever imitation designed to steal your credentials.
So they basically recreate a fake login page.
That's the key here, guys. Karen and Bob are covering this article about that fact. If you're already logged into the resource, you shouldn't have to log in again.
Right.
You know, and you don't even think about it. And this type of email compromise, business email compromise, is very common. For some reason, folks say, oh, wait a minute, I am in my email, but they don't put two and two together. They don't even realize they're in the resource, and they're asked to... for your credentials again, and they're literally doing what I do on this show all the time, asking you your password.
Yep.
And you're giving it to them. So be very careful. It is Cybersecurity Month, but you should be paying attention to it. And this, both of these stories are posted over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com for you to read. But Karen and Bob are artificial intelligence folks who seem to get emails and stuff all the time. explain that to you guys using Notebook LM. You should play with it. It is pretty crazy creepy. And Karen and Bob, they'll ingest the information, and then they'll give you a podcasted deep dive into the topic. And that's going to be our AI corner going forward. So we're going to step out for a quick break, get to your calls. David and Doug, we'll be right back. And we are back.
Ooh.
This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're going to go right to your calls because you sat through Karen and Bob for us there, because we just think having AI do our show is pretty cool. Let's go see what Doug's got going on. Hey, Doug, what's going on?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I love your program. Unfortunately, I listen to it on Odyssey more often than not. Mm-hmm. And when I feel like I have some input, it's too late. You guys are already gone.
Yep.
In this case, I think I'm probably still a little behind.
All right.
But I heard the guy talking about his internet connection dropping.
His brand new one.
Right.
Brand new.
So I got to the point that I got so frustrated with Comcast that I was calling them literally every other day.
Yeah.
They did have the linemen come out.
Yeah.
They put a feeder cable from the road because I'm like 200 yards away.
Yeah.
Same thing. I finally got a tech out there. We went down in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, where is this line going? I said, well, that goes to my son's room. He moved out. He's in college.
Yeah.
He's like, there's nothing connected to it? I'm like, no. I think he said it's acting like an antenna. Anyway, we got rid of the splitter, got rid of that line.
The splitter.
All right. Yeah.
Never happened again. I didn't put the splitter in. Comcast did.
No, I believe that.
Bring it up to his room. But as soon as that was disconnected and put in, no more problems. No more dropped internet.
It messes with the ohms on the actual wire, and that could be part of the issue. So, you took something out of the system that was causing a problem. So this is a brand new installation, so I can't imagine there's much going on with Ken, was his name? Ben?
Ben's issue. He had a new installation, so I don't know if there would be any legacy splitters in there.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He had a new installation of the router, but he could have an old wire.
Oh, definitely.
To his daughter's bedroom that doesn't live there anymore, that's not plugged into something that is acting like an antenna and messing everything up. So
it's worth checking.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It worked for me.
Well, thank you for calling in and suggesting that.
Yeah, definitely.
We just weren't thinking about that because we're dealing with a new connection. But you're right. There could be old wiring that's plugged in, and it could be, messing with the signal.
We appreciate your call, Doug, very much.
That's what happened for me. Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. All right. So, anything's possible when it comes to this stuff when you're troubleshooting. It's very funky to figure out what the actual cause is. It's all trial and error sometimes. Let's go on to David in Vernon next. What's happening there, David?
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I have an Epson ET-2750 printer that is wireless, and I'm very happy with the printer. I mean, I just, from any place in the house, I can just, take my tablet and get something to print.
Nice.
The problem is that some of it, depending upon either if somebody is sending me something, either an attachment in an email, or even if I try to print something myself off of an Excel, sometimes the stuff prints perfect, and other times it prints all garbled. Huh. I went down to the system, and I checked the firmware to make sure I was most current, and that said yes, there was no downloads necessary. And I also put it through a clean cycle.
Yep.
Clean all the heads. And I'm still having the problem. So that's why I'm calling.
Yeah. Print head alignment comes up. Did you drop it?
No.
All right. There goes that idea. it could be a font issue, right? So sometimes somebody sends you a thing to print out and it's in like Cyrillic or some sort of font you don't have, and it might come out garbled because of that, because normally the print is correct, right?
Correct.
And could the garbledness be part of it and not all of it? Like some of it's garbled and some of it's correct?
On the page?
No, it's the entire sheet.
The entire sheet. Okay. Well, we're going to come up against a break here. We're going to do some research on this because there's tons of things we could try. Have you tried a new printer cable?
Well, it's wireless.
Oh, there goes that. There's 0 for 2. All right, so hang on. We're going to do some research during the break here, David, to see why an Epson printer like that would come up with garbled print. Lots of options for us, so we'll be right back with you, okay?
Yeah, you want me to hold or you want me to just listen?
Up to you.
I'll hold.
All right. We're going to put David right back on hold, and we're going to do some research and see if we can find the answer. And Joe's on the line in Litchfield, and a couple lines open for you. 860-522-9842 is the number. Everything we talked about and Karen and Bob talked about are posted over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. We'll be right back. All right. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab, and we've been doing some research on David's printer issue. We're 0 for 2 on our ideas, but we have some others there. David, you still there?
Yep.
All right. So the thing that seems to be plausible for me is that there's some talk here on the old interwebs that say if your system is coming out of hibernation, whether it be the printer and or the computer, it could produce garbled print. And it could just simply be that it's not fully on, doesn't come fully on and starts printing or starts ingesting the information you're sending it and it's garbled. That could be the case. So like, I guess the question we have for you is like, when it comes out garbled, do you then print it again and does it come out okay?
That's a good question. I don't know if I immediately print it again, but I'll check at that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, check it that, because if it then prints okay, it is something to do with how it's kind of coming back online from its sleep mode, which I'm sure the printer is going into and or other systems. So if you told the printer not to go into sleep mode, then it wouldn't have this garbled issue.
Well, according to the article that we read, it's talking about the computer entering sleep mode.
Correct, but yeah. I also contend the printer too would be the same thing, because he's on a tablet, he said.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So my thought is that if you print it again and it comes out okay, it is just the printer just saying, okay, I'm fully up now. Okay, I've got my cache ready to go to ingest your data, and it's cleaner after that. So I'm guessing it's that. Otherwise, it's a font or something. If it keeps coming out garbled for the print you're trying to send, but other prints work fine, then it's that whatever font is being ingested.
Yeah,
in the printer's
I would try to isolate it to that.
Yeah. Those are the only other two things, but I'm guessing it's coming out of sleep. Go ahead.
Yeah, to get back to that sleep thing for 1 second.
Yeah.
If it's in sleep mode, which it normally does because it shuts down when it's not in use.
Right.
And I go down there and put a copy right on the glass to make a copy.
Yeah, you know, a copy.
Right. It never happens like that.
It wakes up right away and does the copy because that's local. That's not coming wireless.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. Everything being copied is happening inside the printer itself.
Right.
It's not talking to something else.
Not being transmitted wirelessly.
Okay.
That's our theory.
I think the suggestion is that there's probably some kind of a buffer that the Wi-Fi packets are coming into.
Yeah.
And whatever's going on with that particular buffer is failing when it comes out of sleep.
Yep.
And it doesn't get the first packet of the print job.
Right.
So it's missing some information about the print job, and then it just tries to deal with it, and it can't, and it gives you garbage on the page.
right. So, you gave me a couple of ideas.
Yeah.
What I may try to do is to try to do a couple of different things.
Yeah.
Like one after the other.
Yeah, there you go.
Meaning print different stuff from either I send something through the internet, you know, or I open up an email that's got somebody sent me an attachment and I try to print it and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And see if I can isolate it some more.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like something okay. You can try to do.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right, David. Good luck.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So, yeah, I think we're on to something with that, and that kind of stuff can happen. We've got Joe, who's been on the line longest here. Let's go to Joe in Litchfield. What's happening, Joe?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Eric and Dennis. I have an issue with my HP laptop. It's about 6.5 years old. It doesn't do this all the time, but when it does, it's a nuisance. If I try to open up the computer and I go to the start page, the start button, and I hit it and I hit the menu. I do also have icons on the desktop, but I don't know. I go to the start button. I always did that.
Yeah.
And I hit, we'll say Thunderbird, and then it'll start going to the page, and then it'll come back down to the start button again. It'll do that like a half a dozen times. I go, whoop, I'm not getting on. Something's a problem here. Hmm. So then I try to go to a browser, which I use Mozilla.
Yeah.
And I'll do the same thing, you know. So I'm saying, man, something's going wrong with this computer. I hope it doesn't crash on me now and I'm done.
Right. So you click on the icon for Mozilla Firefox, and it kind of clicks back and forth. Doesn't actually...
Yeah, it goes back down to the start page, you know.
Yes. It doesn't actually execute the
program. No, it won't come up. It's trying to go up to it, and then it comes back down to your desktop.
I'm thinking it's your... Are you using a mouse or a trackpad?
Trackpad, yeah.
The trackpad. I wonder if it's trackpad sensitivity in some way where your finger is dragging.
The computer, it's 6.5 years old.
Mm.
I'm not vying for a new one, but, you know, if I have to get one.
But, no, I think you're onto something. The trackpad may be
too sensitive.
It might be a phantom input in the trackpad.
Yeah.
What is that? A phantom?
Phantom input is when the trackpad acts like something's touching it when it's not.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Or the sensitivity is such that you think you're clicking on it the way you are, and it's being brushed or touched inadvertently. So maybe my thought would be for you to buy a cheap external USB mouse. Go get like a $20 mouse and a little. It'll have a USB dongle built into it. Plug it into your laptop and see if using the mouse is more reliable than the trackpad. If it is, your trackpad's got issues. And now, if you have a committee over there where you're trying to get an upgrade on your laptop, don't bother any of that.
I'm just the head of the committee.
Oh, okay. All right. So then I think you try the mouse then first.
Yeah, and
she's the head of the committee for her computer. She just got a new iPad, so I can't. She has nothing to say with me now.
All right, that's cool.
We're not saying to not use the trackpad and use the mouse instead. We're just
a test.
Just use this to diagnose the issue.
And if it does work, you can keep using it stop using the pad. But I think it's like Dennis said, a phantom touch. You think you're clicking on it. You're really not.
Yeah.
And it's kind of bouncing back and forth based on what it thinks.
And I'm not saying that you are physically touching it. I'm saying this is a true phantom event.
Glitchy, as it were.
You've heard of this before, then. I'm not the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
These types of things we've had on our show since the show started 30 years ago.
Ever since trackpads first started, I've heard of it. So
Now I'm going to complicate the issue because I have a tablet that's doing the same thing.
A tablet that's doing the same
thing.
Whoa. What kind of tablet is it?
There's a conspiracy going on here.
What kind of tablet is it?
Let's see. Look at that. Where are you? Here I am. It's a Samsung.
Okay. A Samsung tablet.
The same age. 6.5 years old.
All right.
I'm ready to throw it against the wall when it does that. It does it a lot. I read books on it.
Yeah.
My wife's got like 700 books on it, so I read a lot of the books on it.
Nice.
And that's all I do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I get on a page, and you know, I'm in a story, and all of a sudden the thing goes off. On, off, on, off, on, off. It drives me nuts. I finally...
Wait, what do you mean it goes on, off, power-wise?
It'll quiet it down.
So you're saying it turns off, like the screen turns off?
it goes back down to the start page. Same thing as what the computer does. There's a conspiracy going on here.
I don't know, Joe. The only commonality here is
it
you.
It is you. It's not even a similar device.
Yeah, so
I'm picked on here.
We start to blame the user. So here's what we're going to do, Joe. You're going to try the mouse, and if that mouse works, it's either the trackpad or you. On the tablet, it could, again, it could be your thumbs and your fingers are touching things that are causing these types of issues just because of the nature of a touchable device that'll react anywhere you touch it, right? So I'm thinking, check the mouse. If that works, it's probably the pad and or your fingers were doing something.
Darn, I was trying to get a new iPad.
Yeah. And in this case, I think, again, it could be your use of it because it just sounds to me like you're tapping it or sliding your finger, causing you the issue.
Or maybe your wrist is brushing on something.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I have to have my wife look at me and watch me.
There it is. Have her watch you use it. She loves to do that. Without, you know, her day would be made perfect if she could watch you read a book on a tablet. So, all right. Try the mouse thing, okay, sir?
All right. You know, I think about we have robocalls. Boku.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've been getting
nothing
them.
To do about that, huh?
Are you on your regular landline or is it on your cell phone?
Not on the calls, on the email.
On our email.
Oh, you're getting fake emails?
Tons and tons of them.
Well, we're going to have to go to a break, but we can tell you how to improve your phishing settings. Who do you use for your email?
I have Thunderbird. She has. What do you have?
No, who's your mail provider?
Oh, that's Optum.
Okay, so yeah, we're gonna go in there and find some settings on how you can increase the phishing settings, spam settings. Yep, we'll put that on our link for you there, Joe. But we gotta go because Carolyn's getting mad at me.
Okay, so I'm saying goodbye.
You're saying goodbye.
All right, goodbye.
Until next time.
Thank you.
All right, bye bye. We'll be right back. And let's go right to your calls. You're nice enough to join us on this Saturday morning. Going to go to another David out there in Seymour. What is going on, David?
Hi, guys. Looking to buy a new laptop, and one of the options that came up was Windows 11 Home or Windows 11 Pro.
Are you a pro?
Aren't we all?
So if you're using it in your home, though, you definitely want to use the home version. Pro is not necessary for home use. It's going to be more expensive. But the problem is the opposite is true. People, if you own a business and you want to configure your systems properly, stop buying Home for your business.
Yeah. We know it's cheaper, but it doesn't do a lot of things that are necessary.
Right.
But in a home setting, the Home Windows is fine.
So, okay.
Yeah, just the home version for you. So what else? What kind of machine are you going to get?
I'm looking at a Spectre 360.
Oh, yeah.
Those are nice machines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going to get one of the other ones I think you guys usually recommend, but it's like, I don't want to carry that heavy thing around that much.
No, I'm a big fan of the Spectrum. That's kind of what I have now, the Elite Books series. So good. You're going to do well. It might come in a pro flavor because of the type of device it is. And if it does, that's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
But okay. If you have the choice, just go with Home.
Yeah. But sorry, what was your question?
The USB-C ports, I think they're called.
Mm-hmm.
I look at them. There's a bunch of different items. I don't know what the advantage of one over the other is, but because the prices are all over the place.
Mm.
The hubs, USB-C hub, I guess they're called.
Oh, you're going to get a hub to expand it because you've got a lot of devices to connect? Is that what you're saying?
Well, the I think the laptop doesn't have a HDMI port. So it's like, I guess I could get a dongle, but it's like, would be nice to be able to just plug it in normally. I don't use it as a laptop that often, but I do periodically. And it's like, well.
That's too bad. It doesn't. I mean, I got a nice fat HDMI, big old style on mine.
Mine is an Envy, and it's got a DisplayPort.
Yeah, so there could be a different type of adapter. So look at the video output. There could be a mini HDMI, could be DisplayPort, could be HDMI. You could also adapt USB-C to video as well.
Yeah, USB. There are USB-C docks that will have video out on them.
Correct. And again, there's a bunch of them.
They're all over the place, and the pricing is wild. The features are wild. You just got to find something that has the specs for what you need.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for your help, guys.
You got it, sir. Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye. All right. He's going to go help the NASDAQ. Let's go on to Cheryl, I guess, in Prospect next. What's going on, Cheryl? It's like the lightning
round. Oh, hi, Dan. Hi, Eric and Dennis. I got a unique problem. Because I have Yahoo with my Frontier has Yahoo for the mail and everything, and AT&T was doing upgrades to its systems, and I was doing, you know, doing what I had to do before I would lose all my account and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I download my mail from my Frontier Yahoo account to my computer, it goes to archive for some reason.
Huh? It just goes down to the archive folder?
Yeah, instead of the inbox.
Oh, that's weird.
I would think that you've got some kind of a rule or filter in place that's doing that.
What's your mail client?
Yahoo.
I thought you were going to get it. No, your mail client is your software that you're using. Is it Thunderbird? Is it Outlook? Is it just browser-based?
It's browser-based from Frontier.
Okay, so you're in the Frontier system. So you're not really downloading it to your computer. It's just being moved to your archive box. I think Dennis is on to something. It's a rule or a setting.
Yeah.
That you have in there. Because if you actually were downloading it, you'd have a mail client like Thunderbird or Outlook, and you bring the mail down to your computer, and you'd be able to read it even if you were not online. But you're a browser-based email, so you're doing it within the Yahoo system.
Yeah, and I have a Yahoo folder on my computer for the mail.
You have a Yahoo folder on your computer, but it's within
I got two different. I have iCloud, because it's an Apple computer, I have iCloud, and then I also have Yahoo.
But it is on the local computer? It's on a local machine, or is it within the browser when you're looking at the email?
It's on my local computer.
So could you have called the folder archive? Sure.
Everything goes to the. I had the folders that they came with the Yahoo program, and it's one of the folders is archive.
Okay, so that's again when you're in the browser, not on your local, not your local folder.
In my local folder on my computer, when I go to the internet, everything's in the inbox.
Yeah. But so how do you? Maybe I'm missing something, Dennis.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like you're browsing for your email, but then how are you downloading it to your local computer without using a mail client of some kind?
Okay, when I click them, I have a folder for my email in the dock.
Mm-hmm.
It says mail.
Yeah,
so all my mail, when I click that app, the mail comes down to the computer.
What app?
Might be the Windows Mail app.
Maybe. That might be the mail client you're using.
It's Apple. I have Apple. I don't have Windows.
Oh, Apple Mail. Okay. That's what it's called.
So you're
mail.
Using Apple Mail client?
Apple Mail.
All right. Whew. We got there. So you're using Apple Mail. So there must be a setting in the Apple Mail where you've set up to download email to the archive folder rather than the inbox folder. So that might be just an Apple Mail configuration we have to find for you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So I'm going to have to go in there and look and see.
Yeah. So we'll try to find an Apple Mail config.
There's a page on Apple support site about managing the filters in the Apple Mail. We can post a link to it.
We think you told the computer to do it.
Mm.
It doesn't happen automatically.
Somehow it got shit like that.
Yes, some way, somehow. Trust me, we understand that you might have done it by accident, but it wouldn't just do that without somebody telling it to. So we'll see if we can find that Apple Mail settings for you. It is unique. You're right. It was a unique problem, Cheryl.
Yes, thank you, guys.
100%.
We'll see if we can give you some answers, okay? We'll put a link
up. Okay, thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Running out of time here. So yeah, male clients, it's not the Chippendales. A male client is basically, you know, whatever software you're using to download your mail. So think of it as your mailbox out at the front of your home. That's your mail client when it comes to the U.S. Post Office. You have to go and open the post office, the little mailbox out there. That's your mail client. It's accepting the mail from the mail service, which happens to be the U.S. Post Office. Same thing happens with your email. Yahoo is her email post office. And then her mail client, in this case, it sounds like it was Apple Mail. And to download it to the archive folder by default doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, right? I think there's got to be something in there doing it.
Let's go to Marie in Meriden to see if we can help her at all. Hey, Marie.
Good morning, Eric and Dennis. Thank you so much for taking my call this morning.
Our pleasure.
And I want you to know, first of all, that I really enjoy your show. Even though I am computer illiterate, you guys are so entertaining. And you're never grumpy and so patient with the customers. And let's see what you can do to help me today.
So, Marie, you're going to hate us because the outro music just started.
Oh, no.
So we can't help you at all.
Sorry.
Oh, no.
We're so sorry about that. I didn't know I had such little amount of time. Especially with that all the nice things you just said. Now you're going to say, "Oh, those guys suck."
Never.
Can you hold your question for next week?
Yes.
I'm sorry. The time is the time, and we're out of it. So I apologize. Yeah. I apologize for bringing you up. But I do appreciate the kind words.
Thank you.
All right,
Marie. I appreciate you guys.
We'll catch you next time. All right. Sorry, guys. Yeah, ran out of time. I want to thank all you guys for joining us on this lovely Saturday morning. Thank you, Carolyn, for producing. Thank you, Crazy Bob and Karen, our AI people, and Mike G for posting everything live over at our Facebook page and our Twitter site.
And remember, we want you to be geeks, too.
See you guys next Saturday.